Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
There was a grip of amazing moments throughout the entire day yesterday, such as CeeDee Lamb doing this against the Vikings.
In the gun, Dalton looking left, throwing a fade, back of the end zone, diving, Lamb, what a catch! He's got the touchdown! What a catch by CeeDee Lamb! What an acrobatic play by CeeDee Lamb!
So, falling, diving, twisting, I've got no idea what he did on that play, or how he caught that ball. I've watched it a dozen times. Like, the midair adjustment to the ball was outrageous. In fact, nearly as outrageous is Adam Thielen doing this in the second half of that same game.
Cousins back to pass, throws to the back right of the end zone. Down! Touchdown for Adam Thielen, his 10th of the year.
Another beautiful catch by Adam Thielen, a one-arm grab. He was held by Anthony Brown on the double move and was still able to come down with that football.
How do you even ponder making that catch? Vikings radio. One hand up, 2 feet down, touchdown. And a perfect pass from Kirk Cousins and an absolutely jaw-dropping catch from Thielen. This guy made that catch. Catching it as he's going out of bounds, but making sure that he stays in bounds. So, like, when you take a step back, the quality of receivers has gone through the roof in the past few years. If somebody made a catch like that in the 90s, they'd be tried for witchcraft, and they'd be fitted for a mustard blazer right there on the spot. But now, it's routine. Now you see this all the time. And it wasn't just Lamb, and it wasn't just Thielen who were putting up unreal touchdowns. Why don't we go to Baltimore, where Tennessee was taking on the Ravens, and where A.J. Brown was taking on every single Raven. Now, before I get into that, let's go back to before that game. Before the game started and the scene when the Titans gathered on the Ravens logo, John Harbaugh was not having any of that, and he came out and he started to bark at the Titans.
Well, Jim, we were talking all morning about the enormity of this game, and as you saw what happened, a skirmish at midfield because the Titans came out. They took the field. They went into the center, and Malcolm Butler yelling at the sideline to the Baltimore sideline, John Harbaugh coming out in disgust, Mike Vrabel coming out, the officials just giving warnings to both teams. But if this is any indication, expect some chippiness throughout this game, Jim.
I don't think there's any question.
Right? Like, logo taunting and logo protecting. I mean, these are like some of the weirdest traditions in football, right? Especially at that level. But if you're looking to make a statement on the other team's logo before the game, man, you better back it up. You better back it up. And at least for the first three quarters, the Titans were not doing that. Not really. Baltimore had a 21-10 lead in the third quarter, and then it all ripped apart. And it did so in the worst way imaginable. Back to A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown did this to practically the entire Ravens defense.
Tannehill looks, fires. Brown makes the catch at the 10, spinning, driving his way to the 5,
oh,
into the end zone.
Wow!
How did he do it?
Wow!
Touchdown, Titans! Arthur 1, Brown carrying them. He's being pushed forward by McNichols, but he didn't need the help. He is a powerful man.
He is a powerful man. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you know what we're talking about here. If not, to call that a powerful man or a grown man touchdown, that would not begin to do it justice. Like, I'm not sure what's bigger or better than a, quote, grown man. But that was like Derrick Henry in a receiver's jersey. Four guys got a good shot at him, and every one of them came out worse for it. So that was a statement touchdown by Brown and by the Titans. It was a statement also by the Ravens in their inability to wrap up and tackle. But the Titans were not done. They then followed up that statement with another one in OT.
Henry gets the carry running left. Henry to the 25. Henry to the 20. To the 15. To the 10. To the 5.
Yes! Oh, yes!
To
yes!
Victory.
Yes! Yes!
Touchdown, Titans! As the Titans will run out of Baltimore with a shocker in OT.
Oh, yes!
Did I say yes?
Yes.
As you might have surmised, that was Titans radio. So Henry goes into a scrum. He somehow comes out of it the other side all by himself. And that's your ball game. Ball game, thanks for coming. So if you are going to walk all over the opposition's logo before that game, you sure as hell better finish that game. And that's exactly what the Titans did. And man, what a bizarre, bizarre day for the Ravens. In fact, that's not a one-off either. That's not an outlier. That's not just one weird day. Everything about the Ravens right now is weird. From Harbaugh jawing with Malcolm Butler about the logo, to blowing a double-digit second-half lead, to Harbaugh blowing off the post-game handshake with Mike Vrabel, to Lamar Jackson saying this after the game.
It looked like that team wanted it more than us. You know, they was playing physical. When we went up, I feel like, you know, we just took our foot off the gas, but we just got to keep it going. Finish teams.
Actually, Lamar, correction. It didn't just look like they wanted it more than you guys did. They actually did want it more than y'all. Fact, the Titans did want it more, and the Ravens did not want it nearly enough, as evidenced by their coming from ahead to lose, as evidenced of them not being able to hold a lead, a double-digit lead in a game they had to have. But, you know, when I have this Monday recap for you, and you see the Monday recap, obviously it's not all good news. I've got to highlight the bad as well. And there was some truly terrible yesterday, like the New York Jets. These guys are the absolute best. And by the absolute best, I mean the absolute worst. They have turned tanking into an art form. And the four-star general leading that tank brigade is none other than Crazy Eyes, Adam Gase. And what a performance his crew turned in against the Chargers yesterday. I mean, they come out on LA's first drive. They block a punt. Then they turn that into a TD. Bam! Right off the bat, they're up 7-0. Except they weren't, because they missed a PAT. No worries. 6-0 it is. Man, these guys are motivated. They're jacked up. It's like they're playing in the Super Bowl. And in reality, for them, it is the Super Bowl. It actually was the Super Bowl. Any game where these losers have a lead is the Super Bowl. Any opportunity to get off the mat and not run the table backwards is their Super Bowl. And early on, it looked like it might be their day, because on LA's next drive, the Chargers march down the field and then they fumble on the 4-yard line. Like, everything is coming up Jets. They're killing it. Now it's time for Joe Flacco to lead that team on a touchdown drive. And to hell if he didn't do that, he led a team to a TD. Roll it.
Joe Flacco now with his toes on the goal line with a 1st and 10 from his own 4 to pass. His first pass up the gate. Intercepted. Touchdown, Chargers.
Hey.
Tavon Campbell. First career interception in his first season out of Regina by way of the CFL. And the Chargers are on the board.
That might be the fastest pick six I've ever seen. I mean, it was a gift. It was late to the flat. And it just was right to him.
My guys, Matt Money Smith, Daniel Jeremiah, and Big Joe Flacco. Hey, all right, so Big Joe led the wrong team to a TD, but man, he split those numbers. What a pick six that was. I mean, there are gifts, and then there's that. Honestly, I have no idea what that was, or what Joe Flacco saw, or what he thought he saw. Actually, I do know what he saw. I know exactly what he saw. He saw a chance to make sure that his team would not win that game and stay in the running for Trevor Lawrence. That's what he saw. I mean, things were going way too good for the Jets. Going way too well for the Jets. The last thing they needed was to melt down, choke, and win. But luckily, Flacco stepped the hell up, and he made sure that was not going to happen, which I love. You see, this is why you have a vet like that on your roster. This is what a veteran does. When everybody else is losing their mind and going off script, a veteran grabs the moment and takes over and settles everybody down and says, get the hell on my back. Follow me. This is who we are, and this is what we're about. We are losers, and don't any of you forget it. I don't need any of you going rogue and trying to win. What, you think you're better than us? That you're going to go out there and make a play or two and jack up everything that we've been working for all season long? The hell you are. We are winless, and that's exactly the way we're going to stay if I have anything to say about it.
I will. I'm going to.
Hey. And then right on cue, they remember exactly who the hell they are, and they turn that 6-0 first quarter lead into a 24-6 halftime deficit, and they make sure they finish to get to 0-10. Oh, and in case you were wondering, The Jets are officially now eliminated from the playoffs. Yeah, I know in reality, the second they first walked onto the field in week one, they were out of the playoffs. But now it's official. And by the way, if it weren't for the Jets being absolute garbage, there would be even more attention on Matt Patricia and the Lions because they are terrible, and they pretty much have been since he arrived. Jim Caldwell had been having success, but they fired him, and they brought Matt Patricia in and blew it up. And then they tried to put it back together and failed miserably. Hell, Patricia is making Caldwell look like Vince Lombardi. Hey, are you craving some protein after a good workout? Fine. Except this time, don't make a shake and don't eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty. It's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it goes with you wherever you go. Make sure to look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying that way. Look for it in major retail stores near you. And if you don't see it, clones, just ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Austin Hooper is back in the jungle. Austin, what's going on? How are you?
What's up, brother? Good. Just enjoying the Victory Monday. How you doing?
Dude, you took it right out of my mouth. I was going to say, I'm doing great, actually. How good does a Victory Monday feel in late November?
It's great, buddy. Both of us being West Coast guys, you know, a little chilly in this part of the country, but it still feels great, you know, being a Victory Monday. Can't complain.
We're talking Austin Hooper, no doubt. You know, you and I have talked about the elements and the weather in the past, both being California guys. The last 2 weeks, Austin, the weather has been nasty. All right, so you're a California guy. You played with the Falcons. What's it been like playing in that kind of weather and the kind of elements that you've had to deal with and see the last couple of weeks? What's that been like?
Yeah, we're not indoors anymore, brother. Really makes you have to really focus just and understand how Mother Nature actually does affect and dictate what you can do offensively. Like, you know this, watch playing for all your Rams fans out there. Like, the wind's blowing 50 miles an hour. Like, you can't really throw the ball. Like, the wind is going to push that, you know, that pigskin around the field. So you got to, you know, change what you do offensively in time, you know, depending upon what Mother Nature gives you. So that's obviously being, I'm the first 4 years of my career being inside for the most part. Like, that's really changed my entire philosophy of what Mother Nature can do in terms of dictating and affecting games. And the other day, luckily, there wasn't wind, so we're still able to sling the ball around and do our thing. But yeah, man, like, when you're outside, I mean, Mother Nature definitely does dictate what you can do.
Austin Hooper's joining us. I appreciate that. Listen, you're 10 games in, and you've got these great opportunities that are still in front of you, and I know you're focused on that. But at this point of the year, how would you describe the identity of this team?
I think Stefanski and Andrew Berry have done a good job of just cultivating what they want to build, which is, you know, the identity of Cleveland, which is just blue collar, grab your lunch pail and go to work. Like, for example, I know you've been watching it, but, like, see me at Land versus me here, like, I've you know, my role has changed where it's like, you know, we're one of the top, you know, rushing attacks in the world. Like, so, I mean, it's really changed, like, my emphasis of what I need to do and what I need to work on and, like, what I need to do to allow us to do my part and for us to be successful as a team. So, I mean, just grab your lunch pail, go to work, block, you know, some of the premier edge players in this league and, you know, and execute the play-action keepers that come off that and execute the, you know, 3-5, 7-step dropbacks that come off when it's time to execute them. So I'm just really happy with what we're doing right now. I mean, I still don't think we're, you know, at our full potential, but I think that's the exciting part with our group. So I think we've done some good things, but I still think that there's another level we can go to. So we just got to keep working, and hopefully we'll get there.
We're talking Austin Hooper. See, the thing is, like, you've embraced this role, but I'm not sure that everybody would. When you look at your resume, you're a two-time Pro Bowler. You've put up enormous receiving numbers in the past. I mean, it seems to me it might be pretty easy to complain that you're not getting enough targets, that you need the ball more, but you're dominating in the run game. You're taking advantage of the opportunities. Like, what is your mindset and your approach when a guy in your position very clearly could demand the ball?
Sure. I mean, I've always been a team first guy, and I think that's why Andrew Berry and Stefanski, and obviously the Haslams, gave me the opportunity to come here. Because at the end of the day, it's not about me. Like, I mean, having Odell here and having Jarvis here, you know, I mean, just prolific guys are going to be in the history books when it's all said and done. So, I mean, it's like, you know, who am I, Jim Rome? Be like, oh, I want this, this, this. Like, you know what? Like, we have phenomenal runners. We have phenomenal offensive line. And this is just the style of ball we play. And, like, at first, like, I'd be lying to you and your listeners and said at times, like, if there was ever a moment where I was like, oh, man, am I a little bit frustrated? But I realized, like, you know what? Like, there's a bigger picture here that's just more so than just my own immediate self. And once I really embraced that internally and, you know, wholeheartedly accepted that, it's allowed me to be just so much happier in my role and just allowed me to, you know, flourish in my role here.
We're talking Austin Hooper. You know, the one name you did not mention is a guy I want to ask you about, Rashard Higgins, a.k.a. Hollywood. He was on the show, Austin, last week. Man, this guy is amazing. Like, he talked about the fact that there's so many different guys that can step up week to week and produce. Like, from that standpoint, what do you make of the depth and the quality the team has? And then what kind of a positive impact does his energy have on that room?
Oh, man, I mean, Higgy, I'm sure you've got a you got to understand a piece of it when you're speaking to him. I mean, just great energy. I mean, high energy, just like the Dallas kid. Like, you know, when he's in the room, you notice. When he's on the field, you notice. And that's just who he is, a positive, productive force we have on our team. And just like a guy who's kind of lead by example more than his words, just goes out there, does the work every day in practice. So when he got his opportunity, when Odell went down, he was, you know, PFF grade him, correct me if I'm wrong, like one of the top receivers, what was it, Bengals? You know, I mean, just regardless, like when he got his opportunity, fully embraced it and ran with it, and people around him saw the way he worked in practice, like no one was surprised. So, I mean, we're with guys like that on our team, like we have the opportunity to do something pretty cool here.
Okay, so what about that, Austin? Austin Hooper is my guest. You're 7-3. You've got an opportunity to do something really cool. Like the offense, it's got another level, right? And what would that other level look like to you?
Great question, Jim. I'll just say, like, you know, it's kind of cliche, but just like consistency. I feel like there's always something, like, you know, where I didn't do enough on the block here that could have spring Chubb here. You know what I mean? Just like 11 guys on the field, just like one guy here on this play, one guy here on this play. I just feel like once we really are able to be consistent enough, like I really think that's going to be our next step. So, I mean, I'm not there yet. I still need, you know, I still think there's another level that my game can go to. And I'm
Yeah, but Austin, at the same point, make that block to spring. There's been so much talk about that Nick Chubb play against Houston where he ran out of bounds. I want to talk to you about that, but I want to talk about the blocking job and the fact that you absolutely dominated your guy on that play. We've talked about your blocking in the past, but how much pride do you take in a run like Chubb's when you know you had that guy on the edge and you flattened him?
Yeah, it was pretty cool to be a part of, knowing that's going to be on you know, Nick Chubb's highlight tape forever. I got to be a part of you know, a special player's history is going to be pretty cool, you know, when I can look back on it 140. But yeah, it was pretty crazy, Jim. I'm pulling out. It was like a pin and pull, you know, toss play, try to get to the edge, and I'm going up. My job on that play is to block the widest defender on that wide play, particularly that was, ended up being the corner, and the corner saw it and just tried to like dive, you know, at my legs. So I just jumped on him and put him on the ground, and Nick took it, and just the rest is history. So that was pretty cool to be a part of.
It's good to have that on tape. Austin Hooper is joining us. Now, you had to miss some time last month, Austin, because of an appendectomy. Anybody who has had appendicitis knows how awful that is, man. When did you first notice something was wrong, and what was it like to learn that you had appendicitis of all things?
Super crazy. So, like, I Thursday night, I go to a steakhouse, just grab a quick bite. Friday morning, I wake up, I'm like, yeah, no, like, I think I'm having some indigestion or whatever. Like, didn't really, you know, I was like, oh, it's nothing, right? Like, I'll try to go to the bathroom. Like, I'll be fine. I'm like, this is actually starting to hurt a little bit. My stomach's swelling. Like, something's not quite right. Let me talk to the trainer. Maybe they'll give me some. And, like, point me where it hurts. I'm like, oh, you're going to the hospital right now. I'm like, whoa, plot twist. This has just gotten very real.
Right?
Yeah. But luckily, I caught it before it burst, and here I am a few weeks post-surgery, 100% back to normal, so can't complain.
Let me ask you this. Your former Falcons teammate, Alex Mack, went through a similar procedure. What did he tell you about coming back from it?
First he was like, man, I feel for you. I know how it is. That sucks. He said you should be good to go. But then he said, he's like, oh, I also don't run across the middle and get hit in my internal organ. So I don't know. So Alex was pretty realistic and funny with it in his own way. If you know Alex, like, that's just his personality, good dude. But he gave me some good insight just in terms of, like, what to do and what not to do. So grateful to have him as a resource.
We're talking to Austin Hooper for a few more moments. Now, normally you and I will, and I enjoy this part of the conversation where you break down a play, but rather than doing that here, can you break down the week? Like this week, it's Monday, you've got Jacksonville on Sunday. What are the next few days like for you?
Sure. So, Stefanski said earlier in the year, like, you get us to 7 wins, we'll give you a victory Monday. So, Jim, we actually got a true victory Monday in the, I guess, in the weird way that COVID is. We still obviously had to go in the morning and test, and I had a random drug test, even though I didn't score a touchdown. You know how that goes. You only get one of those if you score a touchdown. But so I went in and got my drug test. Like, that's just like the day you have the option of lifting on Mondays or not. And normally you'd watch film, but with us having Victory Monday, we obviously don't have to go in. Tuesday's your off day league-wide. Wednesday's your real work day where you put in your base run game, base pass plays. You get a lift in. Thursday is more third down emphasis, and Friday's red zone. And Saturday, walk through, fly down to, in this case, will be Jacksonville this upcoming week, and Sunday's game day.
You know, I appreciate that breakdown. And then really quickly, Austin, about the defense. I mean, there was a lot made of the fact, of course, that Myles Garrett could not go, and you know what he means to the team. So how impressed were you with the way that unit stepped up and rallied even without him?
Oh, incredible. I mean, that again, you're speaking about depth at our receiver position. We have some depth in terms of some pass rushers, too. I mean, Olivier Vernon having a ridiculous day. Adrian Claiborne, my guy, former Falcon, the savvy old man, still out there getting some work in, doing his thing. I mean, and just tremendous job on the back end with guys like Terrence Mitchell and, of course, Denzel Ward, who's playing at an unreal level right now. So, it's cool, Jim, when you got more than just, everyone just wants to make it out as, you know, it's just Miles out there, and he is, you know, a transcendent talent. But there are a lot of guys out there that are incredibly talented as well. So it's cool to have some depth.
That is cool. He is a 2-time Pro Bowler, and he entered this year leading all tight ends in catch percentage over the past 3 years. Cleveland 7-3. It's a victory Monday. Cleveland is at Jacksonville on Sunday. Austin, had to bring you back. Had to get caught up, man. I appreciate you very much. Enjoy that victory Monday. You guys earned it.
All right, brother. Talk soon.
Last night's Kansas City-Vegas game lived up to the hype and then some, right? Everything about that game was good. Even the audibles. NFL games without the fans are different. And one of the differences is you can hear everything. And last night, it felt like Derek Carr was in my living room shouting out these audibles and calling out to NBA players.
On the run than it used to be.
James Harden.
Put the phone.
Makes his first appearance.
Yeah, wait to see what this is.
James Harden. And he wasn't only going with current players. He was going deep into the archives as well.
Hey, here we go. Hey, Mike. Alert. Chris Mullin.
Yeah, right.
Chris Mullin.
What a basketball reference is tonight.
But Mitch Richmond did not want any of that. Timmy Hardaway did not want any of that. Billy Owens did not want any of that. James Harden, Chris Mullin. How about some love from my guy Tom Chambers? And there was more from both teams. There was a Purple Walrus, a Pistol Pete, and a Sammy Davis.
Purple Walrus, LA!
The other thing I could go on about is the fact that the Raiders took that victory lap around Arrowhead after beating KC earlier this season. Listen, the Raiders are nice. I'd even say the Raiders are really nice. But that right there is some high school level bullcrap. I mean, come on. You're going to take a victory lap in season. As I said on the NFL Today yesterday, the NFL season is 17 weeks long. Why is a head coach as smart and experienced as John Gruden taking his team on an actual, literal, not a metaphorical, an actual, literal victory lap in week 5? Did he have a parade down the strip when he got home as well in week 5? Hey, look, I get that these two teams don't like each other. I get that Arrowhead has been a house of horrors for the Raiders. But taking a victory lap in a nearly empty parking lot seems like such a rookie move. There are a billion reasons not to take a victory lap in week 5, but one of the biggest reasons was wearing a white jersey with the number 15 on it last night. Now, before I get to him and what he did, especially on that final drive, I want to be very clear about this. The Raiders are good. the Raiders are legit. I mean, they're not going to win the division, but I would not want to run into them in the postseason. I wouldn't want any piece of them. They're good. They lay lumber, they hit hard, and they do so on both sides of the ball. Josh Jacobs runs angry. He runs with some nastiness. And the defense, he's got a number of guys who are looking to fly around rocking 2x4s. I like the Raiders. And then you've got Derek Carr. Man, Derek Carr looked good. Derek Carr looked great last night. And there are a lot of people who owe that guy an apology for saying that he was done, or for saying that the Raiders should find somebody else at quarterback, or for saying that Chunk Gruden had no need or any use for him at all. We're talking about a guy who was an MVP candidate a few years back. And to me, he looks every bit as good now as he did then, if not better. I mean, my man was doing some Patrick Mahomes stuff last night, like on this play.
Here comes the blitz. Carr under pressure and gets it away. And it's caught up the 40-yard line. Waller and run out of bounds there. I think somebody had his hand on the left arm of Carr. He still got it away for a gain there of 18 yards.
Derek Carr has been great so far in this one.
Derek Carr was great last night and has been great for much of the season. I mean, this guy's making plays, lots of plays, like this one at the end of the first quarter.
Carr's in the gun. He's got the snap. He's back to pass. He looks. He floats it up left side for the end zone, and it is caught. Was he in bounds? He is. Touchdown, Raiders. Nelson Aguilar in the back corner of the end zone.
I mean, you could not have put that pass in a better spot. And the fact that he had that free play after drawing Kansas City offsides, I mean, that is some next-level stuff. And that touchdown pass gave Vegas the lead with 1:43 to go in the fourth quarter. That one was a perfect end to the drive.
Carter center takes the snap, fakes to Jacobs, back to throw, plants his feet, looking left, nothing there, scans the field. Carr moving to his right, Carr throws corner of the end zone. That one is caught by Jason Witten. Was he in the end zone?
That's a touchdown.
They're going to call it a touchdown for the Raiders.
Derek Carr moved the ball, got out of the pocket with his feet, extended the play, and just fired a bullet to Witten right in between the numbers.
Yeah, that, and they had a defensive end dropping in coverage. That's never a really good thing, even if it is Jason Witten you're dealing with. The fact of the matter is, Derek Carr looked great. I mean, great. And he was doing it with a busted-up offensive line and a defense that had swabbed their way onto the COVID list. And yet there was Carr going toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes last night. The problem is he was going toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes last night. Because if you do that against any other quarterback in the NFL, virtually, you play the way that Carr did, you're going to, quote Jameis Winston, eat a dub. And knowing them, knowing the Raiders, they would then be looking to take another lap around the stadium. But giving Mahomes the ball with that much time left on the clock is just asking for trouble. And this was on a night where Mahomes was good, but not at his Mahomesiest.
Mahomes?
He saved all that for the final drive. 7 plays, all passes, 6 completions. You could not make a game-winning drive look any easier than Mahomes did. He looked like he was going up against air. That didn't feel like an actual NFL game with actual stakes. That felt like guys in t-shirts and shorts getting some reps in the summertime. It was that easy, except it was real. And that was against an actual defense. An actual defense who did not have a chance. Completion, incompletion, completion, completion, completion. And that got them into range for a field goal. A long one, but a field goal. Then one more completion into range for a much easier field goal. But why stop there? Why not just win this damn thing in regulation?
Shotgun snap to Mahomes. He's back to pass. He has time. He steps up. Mahomes throws for the end zone. Got a man wide open. It's Kelce. Touchdown, Kansas City. Travis Kelce was wide open in the end zone, and Mahomes finds him with 28 seconds left.
I mean, that was surgical. That was so easy. Touchdown. That final drive was so crisp and so sharp and so smart and so, so easy. And that's your warning shot to everybody else around the league. This is what that guy can do in that situation. And if you didn't already know, now you do. Andy Reid, jungle favorite. Andy Reid had this to say about Patrick.
I've got Pat Mahomes, so I know you give me a minute and a half and I'm pretty good right there, you know. So we can roll. I'd take him over everybody, and I'm lucky to have him.
Pretty much. Travis Kelce put it another way. Quote, sure enough, 15 is always ready for the moment. End quote. Man, that is the truth. 15 is always ready for the moment. Again, it was so easy and so effortless that Kelce was giving Andy Reid a shoulder massage after the TD. That was awesome. That should be a new tradition. Hey, Ritt, instead of kicking Adam's ass, why don't you come up and give him a little shoulder massage? No? Anyway, that should be, that should be a tradition, right? You score a TD, you start rubbing on your head coach. Adam. Just kidding. I'm not sure what's more relaxing in the final seconds of a one-score game with a rival. Having Patrick Mahomes on your side or getting a massage from your star tight end. Tie for first. And most of all, this is why you do not take a victory lap in week 5, because the other team can show up in your house later on and get nice with a victory massage. I don't know, Grudes. You're doing a good job. Better than I thought. But, head down, mask up, keep moving. Hindsight is 50-50. I just don't think that Andy is going to tell his bus driver to circle around the PF Chang's a couple of times before pointing that thing back to KC. Let me hit you with a pretty alarming stat. Did you know that a fire department responds to a fire every 24 seconds? So we have teamed up with First Alert, the most trusted brand in fire safety, to help you be ready for the unexpected and to review some key safety tips. Smoke and carbon monoxide alarms help provide an early warning in the event of a home emergency. And having enough First Alert smoke and carbon monoxide alarms is one of the very best things that you can do to protect your family and your home. Just be sure to install alarms on every single level and in every bedroom. And once they are installed, it's important to maintain them by testing them with regularity. Also, remember, the alarms do not last forever, and they do need to be replaced at least every 10 years. For a replacement option, I'm going to go with First Alert's combination smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a 10-year sealed battery. Obviously, the alarm provides great 2-in-1 protection against smoke and carbon monoxide, and I don't have to sweat changing the batteries for an entire decade. Lastly, take this time to discuss home safety with your family. Be sure to plan and practice an escape route, and remember to practice it at least twice a year. And for more information on fire safety products, safety tips, and educational activities that you can do at home with your family, just go to firstalert.com/fireprevention month. Again, that's firstalert.com/fireprevention month. We are joined by Mike Silver. What's going on, Mike? How are you?
Great, Jim. How you doing?
Good, bud. Good. Great to have you back. Thanks so much. Lots to cover. Mike, let me just jump right into it. What did you make of Sean Payton's decision to start Taysom Hill instead of Jameis Winston?
You know, it's interesting. I did talk to Sean a lot over the offseason when he was thinking about signing Jameis. And, you know, he felt that when he got Jameis into his system and taught him the Saints ways, that you know, that turnover issue would be severely mitigated. And, you know, he's a former number one overall pick. This could be Drew Brees' successor. At the same time, he obviously is intrigued by Taysom Hill and is very high on him. And around the time he actually signed Jameis is when he extended Taysom Hill. And he was very open with both guys. And he just said, look, this is the plan. If Drew goes out in a given game, we're going to put Jameis in. And if he goes out for a while, like last year, we're going to give Taysom a run. And with all of that said, he told me last night that he wrestled with the decision a lot because he has been so impressed with Winston during this time he's had him. So I think all of this leads to, you know, a more prolonged competition that likely will take place as soon as Drew Brees hangs it up, which I likely believe will be after this season. And, you know, this was a chance for Taysom Hill to show what he could do. And Sean told me last night, I do believe, it, you know, my instinct tells me that the quarterback of the future is on our roster right now. We just don't know which one of the two it'll end up being.
Mike Silver from NFL Media is joining us. So, Mike, also take me back to before the game started yesterday. You called your shot. You said that you thought that Tua was going to have a problem with the Broncos and their defense, as well as the Dolphins have been playing over the past month. What did you see that made you say that?
You know, the last week on my show, The Aftermath, which airs Mondays from noon to 3 Pacific on NFL Network, I quoted a band near and dear to my heart that I know you don't hate, and that's the Grateful Dead. And the quote was, "When life looks like easy street, there is danger at your door," from Uncle John's band. I had seen Tua's quote saying, you know, "I thought the NFL would be harder. It's easier than I thought it would be." And just the way things had gone so well for the Dolphins for the last 2 weeks, you know, and Brian Flores, that, you know, they're doing a great job over there and have injected themselves into the playoff race. But, you know, Vic Fangio schematically is a problem for even really, really savvy, experienced quarterbacks. And I just had a feeling that Tua was going to see things, or think he was seeing things that he hadn't seen before. You know, every once in a while, my instincts are right. So I did call that shot. And I talked to Fangio both on Saturday and on Saturday if he had seen Tua's quote. He said, "Nah, I'm going to stick to what we do better." But he obviously was able to capitalize on it.
Yeah, I'm guessing they did use that. Mike Silver's joining us. I mean, one thing to think it if you're Tua, but entirely another to say it. And Mike, the Packers lost to the Colts in overtime yesterday. You have a piece on NFL.com, in fact, last month, about the relationship between Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers. The piece was born out of a conversation that you and LaFleur had on your podcast. What's your sense as to how that relationship is this year compared to what it was last year?
Well, you know, I always thought year two was going to be a potential jump. And, you know, we certainly saw that, like, with Matt Ryan and Kyle Shanahan when Matt LaFleur was on that staff in Atlanta. So ideally, you know, year one, you're acclimating to the offense. You're getting through your stylistic issues. And then you have a chance in year two to make a jump. Obviously, this was the weirdest offseason ever. But I do think they used the Zoom sessions really well, and with offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett. And here's the other thing, Jim. When they picked Jordan Love and that bomb was dropped, I think it became very clear very quickly to Aaron Rodgers that that was not a coaching decision. That was an organizational decision. But in this organization, the general manager, Brian Gutekunst, has the power to do those things. And, you know, this was not Matt LaFleur saying, "Hey, man, my guy's old, get me the next guy." Not that he was anti-Jordan Love, but, you know, I just think it's not nefarious or insidious. I just think that there's a very clear us against them bond, and not like, "Oh, we hate our management," but just like, "Hey, we're all in this together now. You're our guy, and whatever management does, management does." So I think you combine that with the way Aaron's handled it all, which is to embrace Jordan Love personally and kind of compartmentalize. All of that's created a pretty good environment.
Mike Silver is joining us once again. All right, Mike, I'm moving through it, but you had an amazing thread on Twitter last week breaking down what happened between Giants head coach Joe Judge and the now former offensive line coach Mark Colombo. What was the history with those two, and what was life like in the last few weeks before that big blow up?
Well, you know, the accounts I'm hearing, you know, Judge seems to be like a lot of former Bill Belichick assistants, coming in trying to establish something, but maybe conflating the way that Bill acts with the way that Bill has incredible coaching success. And, you know, the acting like you're better than everyone and a jerk, in my opinion, doesn't do a whole lot unless you can also, A, coach like Bill Belichick, and B, you happen to have Tom Brady to cover up a lot of ills. So, you know, there's been plenty of that going along. To Judge's credit, the Giants have gotten it rolling lately. They've won two games, and because they play in the worst division in my memory in the NFL, they are a playoff contender. But, you know, the atmosphere hasn't been great. The line was certainly struggling, and rookie left tackle Andrew Thomas got off to a really rough start. They had tough opponents. From what I've heard, Colombo seemed to be getting it to a better place, but Judge came over and corrected the center's technique. Nick Gates, a few weeks ago, Colombo kind of, you know, liked it his way. And then from that point on, it just felt as though Judge was not loving Colombo and making it pretty clear, to the point where he brought in a consultant and like that. You know, but I've also heard things that, you know, when Judge and some of the former New England people that he brought along with him are walking around saying things like, you know, Tom Brady's really not that great. He can't throw deep. He can't throw outside the numbers. He can't really move. I think that catches, a lot of people are taken aback by that. And so he has clashed with some players. He has obviously clashed with one former offensive line coach, Mark Colombo, and you have a situation where the current offensive linemen are a little mystified as they come out of their bye week. They're just kind of like, hey, so do we have to change everything now? What's going on? So as good as it's been for the Giants with that winning, these games recently, I do see signs of trouble.
We're talking to Mike Silver. In fact, Mike, stay on that the other point that you made, because also from your Twitter account, you talked about how the former Patriots and those staffers are saying things like, yeah, Tom Brady, he's really not that great. I mean, this is a system thing more than it was him. I mean, what's the reception or what's the reaction to a team that has three wins or the guys running that team saying things like, hey, by the way, Brady really isn't all that?
and they're also saying things like, hey, man, our personnel here on offense is every bit as good as what the Patriots had. And it's just, I get that you're trying to make a point, but, I just don't understand why people think that those things will resonate with grown men in that building or in any building. And look, I covered Joe Montana. I'll just tell you a story I love to tell.
Please.
So, early on in my career, I was covering Joe Montana. He hurt his elbow and missed the entire 1991 season. Steve Young came in and won the passing title. And so the next year in training camp, there was a lot of Joe and Steve talk. And I talked to Mike Walter, the 49ers veteran linebacker, as he was coming off the field in Rockland. And I said, I started to ask the question. He cut me off. He said, I know what you're asking. He said, listen, Steve Young is one of my best friends on this team. He is a great person. He's an incredible athlete. He is an unbelievable quarterback. I would go to war with him any day, and it's an honor. I have a separate wing in my house because of Joe Montana. My daughters will have financial security in their lives because of Joe Montana. Do not ask me to be objective about this question. And so I just don't think people understand when a generational quarterback comes along who can help uplift a franchise for a long period. And Tom Brady, it's a insanely long period that happened in New England. So many other people get uplifted by that, in too many ways to count. And you have caught lightning in a bottle, and it is an unbelievable thing. And yes, it's a group effort, and it's collective, and it's magical, and it's awesome. But try not to forget that a lot of the reason that you are in the position you are in is because of that excellence. And so even if you secretly thought, well, Tom Brady's great, but there are certain things he doesn't do that well, maybe don't walk around acting all cocky and saying them in front of other people, because you will reveal a lot about yourself.
Talking to Mike Silver, Mike, I normally don't really have time or even an interest for that kind of goat type of conversation, that real lazy stuff that people go with to try to get the content. But I mean, you've done this a long, long time, and you did cover Joe. I always thought that Joe, and again, we're like similar in terms of age, but Joe was different, man. Joe was so different than anybody I've ever been around or anybody I've ever watched. Does it feel the same way to you? I mean, generations are different. The game has changed. But Joe is really a different sort of guy.
Yeah, to me, the thing I've always cited with Montana is the magic, right? There were so many situations that just seemed unfathomable that he could pull out of, including in college with the chicken soup game at Notre Dame and, bringing him back from 35-0 in his first season as a starter or part-time starter and all the way on up. So to me, I've always cited the magic, and Brady really, for all the greatness, for a long time, there were a lot of, field goals and breaking a tie at the end, and that's not his fault, but and also with Brady, I think sometimes the checkdowns and the way it looks doesn't look as eye-catching and prolific. But when I covered the Super Bowl when they were down 28-3 to the Falcons and saw that in person, my eyes popped out of my head. So I don't know, I think I'm always going to be a ride or die Montana guy, but it is certainly, you can't argue that Tom Brady is by far the most accomplished player in the history of the NFL, and he's still doing insane things at 43, and who knows, maybe he'll be right back in the mix this January, February, if we're lucky enough to have a normal playoffs and Super Bowl.
Fingers crossed, hopefully so. All right, so Mike, I mentioned off the very top that you are the host of the Pass It Down podcast with Mike and Natalie Silver. What is it like co-hosting a podcast with your daughter?
It's really fun, Jim. She's my only non-gaucho, so, you know, you got to feel bad for her in that regard.
But she is forgiven.
No, she's you know, she's a great kid, and when we talked about doing it, you know, she said, I don't know nuts and bolts football or anything close to it. And I just said, good, because maybe you'll have a fresh set of eyes when it comes to interviewing some of these people. But we've just had a ton of fun. We've had legendary rappers like Luke Campbell. We've had, you know, big time NFL personalities. We've had experts on COVID-19. And, you know, it's just because of this unique situation, it's obviously really, really, really hard on a lot of people. You know, we are among the lucky ones, but you know, having my kids around more than they would like right now, it's great for me, and I'm just trying to take advantage of that time.
And then one last thought on that, Mike, like, we're in it and we know what they pay us to do, and it's awesome. There's no better job, but how much fun are you having with it in terms of being able to talk about all sorts of different issues and not just the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, you know me, Jim. I mean, I've always been into the music and the pop culture and the politics and all that. So that part is really, really cool. And, you know, and we're living in crazy times, right? Stuff that you and I would never have predicted, I think. And so it's been super captivating. I mean, I do look forward, I'm hoping, to the time where we can, you know, not have to tune in to every single national affairs issue like daily, and it gets a little bit more routine and boring seeming. But, you know, these are crazy times, and it is surreal that we are going through a global pandemic, and there's nothing we can do about it. I mean, it's humbling, and it's also, you know, amazing to see the human race come up with treatments and vaccines and a potential way out of it. And so, yeah, in our latest episode, there are two doctors who are at the forefront of this fight, who I happen to go to college with, and you know, I'm super proud of, but we've had them on twice now, and it's the easiest podcast prep ever. You just ask every single question that any of us wants to know about all of it, you know, testing, treatment, vaccines, you know, what are we doing, what's safe, where are we headed? So yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, those of us who are able to keep working through this and have it be remotely similar, you know, I think we're grateful. I mean, I know that when you go on television, you're rocking like a little bit more of a, I feel like it's more of like a 70s, 80s Jim Rome look right now. And I kind of like it.
I like that. I like you saying that, Mike. Appreciate it. You can read and watch and consume all of his content on NFL Media. He is the pride of Cal. He is a gaucho parent and the host of the Pass It Down podcast with Mike and Natalie Silver. Mike, great job. Appreciate you. Always good to have you on.
Love you, man. Thank you.
You know, week to week, you're never sure exactly what you're going to get in the NFL. Some weeks are not great. Some weeks are epic. There was a little bit of all of that yesterday, but it was not all great. In fact, there were some really bad moments yesterday. Like this announcement from the referee in the Cincinnati-Washington game.
On the field, there was a fumble recovered by the defense in the end zone and brought back into the field to play and fumbled back into the end zone, which was recovered, resulting in a safety. However, it was holding offense number 67. That penalty is accepted. 10-yard penalty, replay, fourth down.
Wait, what? I mean, that announcement onto itself was a journey onto itself. That announcement was a roller coaster of a statement. That announcement was an explanation of what happened on this play.
Him when he's in this position on the goal line. Burrow looks in his direction, pocket collapses, rolls right. He's going to run for it. Flag, he's throwing. Burrow's clutch, football loose. Washington had recovered initially, and who's got it? Touchback, Washington, the recovery in the end zone. It's Darby.
Oh, disaster.
And we will check the flag here.
So that was a complete and utter bit of chaos. Joe Burrow scrambling on fourth down, getting wrecked by Chase Young, and fumbling. And that was just the start, because Washington recovered the ball on the field of play. Then they fumbled it back into the end zone. and was tackled in the end zone for a safety. And then none of it counted because of a holding call on the Bengals. So it goes from a potential TD for Cincinnati to a fumble recovery for Washington to a safety for Cincinnati and then to nothing at all. And I wish that was the only play from the Cincinnati-Washington game that I was going to talk about, but it's not, because there was also this play from the third quarter, and frankly, it's pretty sickening.
Burrow back to throw from the two, loops it high downfield, leaping attempt by Boyd, broken up by Fuller. And after gaining 7 yards on the first play, Burrow is down.
Joe's hurt.
And he's grabbing his left knee, in pain.
Oh, God.
The biggest nightmare for Bengals fans this season was an injury to rookie quarterback Joe Burrow, and he was in serious pain at the end of that play, reaching for his left knee.
Bengals radio on that call, and that is, in fact, their worst nightmare. That's awful. I mean, that is really awful. Any injury in the NFL is terrible, but an injury to a rookie who is playing at that level is next level awful. Just ask one of the guys on the other side, Chase Young.
Man, I was going, and the heart of hurt was a yell, and he held his knee. You know, you never want to see that. I was hurt, man. I was hurt because I know Joe. I wanted to play. I wanted to keep playing against Joe. So it's like, you know what I'm saying? I was hurt for Joe. I was just, man, you just never want to see that happen to anybody. And I was hurt, man. That's all I can say.
Never. You never want to see that happen to anybody, especially a guy like that. And you can see how much respect he already has in and around that league when you see that almost their entire team came off the field to check on him, and the opposition was checking on him. I mean, this guy is the first player to give the Bengals and their fans any hope in a long time, and now he's done for the season. After the game, the team was not ruling him out for the year, but Burrow was ruling himself out, tweeting, quote, "Thanks for all the love. Can't get rid of me that easy. See you next year." He thumbed that out like an hour after it happened. I'm not a doctor, but watching that play, you could have ruled this guy out for the season before the whistle even blew. It was that brutal. It was that brutal. And immediately the questions start to pop up like, did the Bengals do enough to protect this guy? I mean, honestly, for a good chunk of the season, it seemed like they couldn't do any less to protect this guy. The offensive line at times almost looked like they wanted to get the guy a shredded knee. I mean, of course not, right? But watching them play and having this guy go out there time and time again to take the beating that he would every single week. I mean, like, if you put a guy in the line of fire often enough and long enough, he's going to catch a burning slug or two. And yes, I know the line was getting better in the past few games. Yes, I know they were going up against Washington. But isn't that the point? Washington is known for its pass rush. That crew brings the pain as well as anybody. And you saw that in the first half when Young decked Burrow and forced a fumble. Bengals coach Zach Taylor was asked after the game, was there anything else he and they could have done to protect the face of the franchise and their franchise quarterback?
All we can do is make progress as the season goes. And we gave up a lot of pressure early in the season. In these last couple of weeks, our guys have done a great job of keeping people off Joe. He's had a great pocket. You know, he did not have a sack in the first half. And the hit, as I saw it, wasn't when he had the ball in his hand. And so, you know, people keep talking about the offensive line without it seemingly watching the film from the last 4 weeks. Again, those guys have done a good job. It's been a revolving door of players. They're doing a great job. Joe's done a good job moving us down the field. And we felt like we were making a lot of progress over the last 5 weeks. And we're not going to apologize for any of that.
Hey, listen, I get what he's saying. I get what he's doing. He's not going to come out and blast his offensive line. And I do also know that injuries are a part of that game. And it can happen no matter what plays you call and who you have running them. It's a part of the game. But if you're investing in a franchise quarterback and the guy is a generational talent or a transcendent talent, and you're going to make that investment in that guy, maybe you invest in the guys in front of the guy. Maybe you invest in a franchise offensive line as well. Because there's no point in having a franchise quarterback if he's going to spend all of his time on his back or running for his life. But Cincinnati did not do that. They didn't make that a priority before the season. And if they did make it a priority, they whiffed on it completely. And just because the guy kept getting up from all the hits until yesterday doesn't mean that it was working. Ask Andrew Luck how the absence of an offensive line worked out in the long run. That does not mean that that was working. And that was a sickening injury. Hate to see that. Host of the SI Boxing Podcast with Chris Mannix. And, of course, good friend of the program, Chris. What's going on, brother? How are you?
What's going on, Jim?
Usual stuff. I got to talk to you, Chris, about the start of free agency. I appreciate you coming back on. You knew it was going to be a really unusual free agency period, Chris, because of the accelerated time frame. But what do you make of the first few days and the number of deals that have gotten done already?
I mean, certainly some teams reshaped their rosters. I think a theme of this free agency was that when a team put a legitimate offer out there, players and their agents weren't really screwing around. Like they kind of knew that money was going to dry up pretty quickly. There was only a finite number of teams with legitimate cap space as it was. So if there was a solid size offer on the table, whether it's Christian Wood in Houston or even Montrezl Harrell in L.A., these guys jumped on it and took it. So that was kind of a theme of the week. I don't know that the balance of power was tipped one way or the other. I mean, I liked what the Bucks did, you know, first with Drew Holiday and then kind of retooling their roster with the likes of Bryn Forbes and Bobby Portis and a few others. The Lakers, I think they upgraded at key positions, beginning with Dennis Schroeder and then, you know, going down the list to end with Pau Gasol or Marc Gasol. But I don't know that any team, you know, there was no kind of massive move, right? Like there was no, you know, huge name shifting teams that, you know, tilted the balance of power in the conference.
Talking to Chris Mannix. All right, so a lot to unpack there. Let me ask you about the Lakers, though. For instance, you mentioned Marc Gasol. Dwight Howard was a revelation for the Lakers, Chris, in their championship season. And then we had the excitement of him tweeting that he was going to stay with the Lakers, only to find out that there was a miscommunication and that he ended up with the Sixers. I mean, exactly what did happen? How do you explain what happened there?
Well, I mean, first, this could only happen to Dwight.
Right.
Like, there's no other player this could happen to where you'd be less surprised than would happen with Dwight Howard. What my understanding was that, you know, he had been discussing a new deal with the Lakers, which is that the terms were pretty straightforward, right around $3 million, which is, you know, basically one of the minimums that the Lakers can offer. And Dwight thought it was a real offer. The Lakers were not prepared to make a real offer because they had other things to do first, namely, you know, finding a way to get Marc Gasol. And Dwight just went a little bit early, you know, shot a little early and took to Twitter and put it out there. That tweet was up about 5 minutes before he realized that wasn't a actual offer. And fortunately for him, you know, Philadelphia was very interested from the onset of free agency. The Sixers understand that Joel Embiid is not a 75 game per year player. He's probably going to miss between 10 and 15 for various reasons. And, you know, having a backup that, you know, is as big and physical as Joel is a good thing for that team. You know, Doc Rivers got a bird's eye view of Dwight in L.A. this past year, so he knows what he's getting into. So, you know, Dwight was pretty fortunate to have the Sixers as a backup because, you know, it wasn't that long ago, Jim, that Dwight, you know, was probably thinking about China, you know, and playing over there because the NBA had pretty much been done with him.
That's what I mean, like a complete revelation for the Lakers, and he's still in the game and he's still in that fight. Chris, what about the Lakers then? Where does that leave them in your mind? For instance, are they the favorite in the West, or do you need to see what LeBron looks like before you can make a statement like that?
Well, I think they can win the favorite in the West, and until LeBron fades significantly, we should expect him to be the same LeBron James. I think the moves they made, you know, look, they may require an adjustment period as you get used to new guys, but you know, Dennis Schroeder's coming off his best year of his career. You know, probably should have been the sixth man of the year. I'm not entirely sure how Montrezl Harrell and Anthony Davis play off each other. Davis, as we know, prefers a more sturdy seven-footer to play alongside, but Harrell, you know, is the sixth man of the year and is going to put up some good numbers in L.A. And Gasol kind of solves their size problem. I mean, Gasol was a starter, you know, last year for the Raptors, was a starter on you know, the championship team that they had. I mean, he still got something left in the tank, and in a role that doesn't require him to do too much, I think he's going to be really effective. So I think you have to look at the Lakers coming off their championship, despite the, you know, some of the around the fringe changes, to be the favorite in the conference and the favorite, frankly, to win the whole thing.
He is Chris Mannix. He's a senior writer for SI, also an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston. In fact, Chris, speaking of which, what was your reaction when Gordon Hayward opted out of that $34.2 million salary with the Celtics? And then what do you make of that four-year, $120 million deal that he received from the Hornets?
Well, look, no player opts out of a contract like Gordon had without being pretty sure that there's an offer out there that will exceed it, at least in terms of overall value. Now, we've seen players opt out of contracts and take less money in the short term to make more money on a long-term deal. So I expected Gordon to have, I don't know, something in the neighborhood of 3 years, $60 million maybe on the table or something in that neighborhood. Never in a million years did I expect Charlotte to step up with a four-year, $120 million contract. I just didn't see that one coming. Now, the Hornets, I was saying to everybody all week, like, that they were a player for all this because the Hornets had cap space, and they had signed Gordon Hayward before. I mean, go back to 2014 when they signed Hayward to an offer sheet that Utah eventually matched. You know, Jordan was the owner then. They liked Gordon Hayward, so I knew they'd be in play, but you know, the idea that Gordon is worth to them $30-plus million per year is truly flabbergasting. It really is. I mean, especially when you consider that it seems like, and we don't have the final word yet because I think Boston would still love to do a sign and trade, but it seems like they're going to stretch Nick Batum's contract, which effectively over the first 3 years of Gordon's career makes him a $39 million per year player. And I don't know what you're doing that for if you're Charlotte. I mean, Gordon's a good player still. He's going to put up some numbers with the Hornets, but you're basically talking about going from the 12th seed to the 10th seed with that team. And I don't get that thinking, that rationale at all if I'm the Hornets. So I think it was Zach Lowe who reported that, you know, Michael Jordan calls Gordon Hayward and like, you know, convinced him to go. I'm like, convinced him how? Like, he offered him $120 million. Like, what? That's like, you know, me being convinced to date Brooklyn Decker back in the day. Like, it doesn't work. Like, none of this works. It doesn't make any logical sense. Like, you have to, you see that money on the table, you take it if you're Gordon Hayward. And I would imagine, I haven't talked to Gordon about this or anybody in his camp yet, but I would imagine when he saw that number, it was like, okay, goodbye.
Agreed. Like, where's the pen? Just give me the pen. Let's get this before they change their mind. All right, so last week, Klay Thompson suffered the Achilles injury. Chris, what does that mean for Golden State this year and for the next few years?
Hey, look, it probably takes them out of title contention this year. You know, Kelly Oubre is a good player. He'll do some things for him. Kent Bazemore is a good player. He'll do some things for him. But they're not Klay Thompson, and I don't know how they win in the West without Klay in that mix. What it does allow them to do is take some time and develop James Wiseman on a little more patient track. He's a little bit more free from those championship aspirations, or his championship expectations to do some things. And I think James Wiseman is going to be excellent. I think he fits into exactly what Golden State wants to do. And I think by midseason, he's going to be a real player for them. So I think it allows them to develop some of these younger guys, specifically Wiseman. They'll have another high draft pick in next June's draft because they have a lightly protected Minnesota pick that they'll likely get transferred to them. So they've got some options here. I mean, they can go out and make another trade. They can move Wiseman. They can move some other pieces. It just, the disappointing part of it is it makes the Warriors, you know, probably not a championship-level team. But I don't think the window's closed. I mean, Steph and Draymond still have a few more good years, high-level years left in them. I just think that it's probably not going to happen this year without Klay in the lineup.
We were talking to Chris Mannix. All right, Chris, before I let you go, I want to talk boxing for a minute. I had Dana White on the show last week. We ended up talking about Bob Arum's comments about Terrence Crawford. What did you make of Arum's comments, and what does Bud's future look like to you?
Well, I mean, Bob's blunt at all times. And Bob has been, you know, hemorrhaging might be too strong a word, but he's been losing money on Terrence Crawford because he can't get him the big fights. And the contract he signed with Terrence guarantees him a certain amount of money. And ESPN is not ponying up, you know, enough to cover the $4 million for Terrence Crawford, Kavalauskas. It's not ponying up enough to cover the $4 million for, you know, Crawford versus Kell Brook, plus the $2 million Kell Brook needed to get paid. So that comes out of Top Rank's pocket. And it's doubly problematic when you don't have a gate and you can't rely on, you know, a million, 2 million, whatever it might be, that Crawford's going to bring in. So, look, I mean, it's maybe he's a little bit too strong with his wording, but he's not making any money off Terrence Crawford. In fact, he's losing money. And as he looks forward, he's not sure how that's going to change. So I don't think we can expect Bob, who's going to be 89 years old and just a couple of weeks to sugarcoat it all of a sudden. He doesn't want his bottom line to be so, you know, deliberately damaged just for to maintain a relationship with Terrence Crawford. So I don't know what happens. I still think Terrence's next fight is probably with Top Rank, but you know, going into the middle of 2021, unless they can make a co-promotional deal to do Crawford versus Errol Spence, I don't think he's going to be with Top Rank that much longer.
All right, so really quickly, if that fight does go down, how do you see that matchup?
It's a coin flip. You know, Spence is a more accomplished guy at 147 pounds. He's going to be the bigger fighter, and he's shown me against Mikey Garcia that he can box, against Sean Porter that he can bat. He can do a lot. I mean, Crawford's versatile too, but I just haven't seen it against top guys at 147. It's why I love the fight, Jim. I can't pick it either way. I think whoever controls the pace of that fight probably wins. Whoever lands the big shot probably wins. So it's a great fight that, you know, hopefully happens early next year.
It's a great fight. I love that matchup. He's a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston. Good friend of the program. He is Chris Mannix. Appreciate that so much, Chris. Thanks a lot. Great job.
Anytime, Jim.
Buffalo. Jake in Buffalo. Jake, how are you? What's up?
Jump in the box. What is up? Hey, I just wanted to run down a few thoughts about the subpar Josh Allen-less football I was forced to watch this Sunday. And watching the Pats take another L is never going to stop being fun for us Bills fans. While I watched that old, beleaguered Patriots juggernaut try to take on one of the most exciting and dynamic quarterbacks in the NFL, I couldn't help but think of the rumble in the jungle. That is the Ritt v. Hawk Battle Royale. And much like that Patriots team, I think old man Ritt can possibly hold down his own for a few rounds. But down the stretch, once his sugar high gives out and the insulin stops working, Ritt's going to crumble like the Chips Ahoy he's been shoving down his gullet for the last 50 years. And I don't know about you, Jim, but I've never seen a fighter slamming Rice Krispie Treats and Cocoa Puffs in the corner between rounds. You can't carbo-load your way to victory, Ritt. And at the end of the day, Hawk's youth and speed is going to be too much for that old man. I mean, Hawk is the picture of physical prowess. Having battled his way from severe back injury suffered while tying his shoes and learning to bob and weave his way through stationary cameras. Besides that, Hawk's style is impetuous. His defense is impregnable. Hawk's just ferocious. He wants your heart. Hawk wants to eat your children. Although I do worry about Hawk's attitude because I don't know if he has enough dog in him to win a fight. But if worst comes to worst, Hawk can just take a page out of Tyson's book and take a bite out of Ritt's ears. But good luck in getting your mouth around those dinner plates on the side of Ritt's head. Anyway, Jim, I'll leave you with this. Go, Hawk, go. Put Ritt in a nursing home. Garrett Ritt, hey, what do you say? Put on the gloves and put down that cake.
You go ahead and rack him. Jake in Buffalo breaking it down. All right, then, to the phones. Let's go to South Dakota. Joe, what's going on with you, Joe? How are you?
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Good, good, Joe. What's up?
You were kind enough to let me speak before the COVID broke, and I was the Red Sox fan that congratulated the Dodgers on getting Mookie, and so much has happened since then, kind of adversity, but your show has been a beacon of hope and makes me laugh and makes me think, and so losing Mookie pales by comparison. I lost one of my favorite cousins a few months ago. One of my brothers was diagnosed with cancer. But life goes on, and we're keeping the faith, and your show is helping us do that. So more power to you, and go Mookie. We still love you.
Appreciate that, Joe. Thanks so much. All right, so that was not the cleanest line, but he's got a family member who was diagnosed with cancer. I'm really sorry to hear that, Joe. Let's go to Green Bay this time. Shane in Green Bay. Hey, Shane, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's up? Shane, you are on the air right now. Talk to me. Yo, what's up? And now you're
not. That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Something else I didn't think that I would still have to say at this point. Two things that I never thought that this far down the road I would have to say. One, do not threaten to kill an athlete on social media. And number two, if you're on hold, turn your radio or TV down and be ready, because you never know if I'm coming to you or not. Just be ready. Stay ready so you don't have to get ready, and know that if you're on hold, I might come right to you. Lawrence, you are on the air. I know you know what to do when you're on the air. What's up, Larry?
Hey, Rome. As far as the upcoming Hawk versus Ritt pay-per-view, I'm taking the underbird
to out-tech old man Sugar Daddy in five rounds. Anyway, Rick in Buffalo is still smarting over that last-second loss to Arizona, but Adam Gase and his pathetic Jets are playing like the Goo Goo Dolls. So, do-do-do-do, hey, coach, get your act together, you Jets. They really suck. It doesn't matter what the weather. They haven't won a thing since Broadway Joe Namath was around. Always struggling. Other teams just love to put him in the ground. James Kelly is money with his football picks. Listen up or you will crap out.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Speaking of crapping out, my man, Snake Eyes, you waited 8 weeks for that. 8 weeks. 8 weeks. He was on hold.
Good night now!